So welcome to Anurag Mahesh Verma podcast. This is a very unique kind of episode that was recorded at the airport waiting room. The story is that I was at Kerala Literature Festival as a speaker, and this was the last week when flights all over India were getting delayed due to the fog situation in the northern India. Due to this, my flight from Calicut to Mumbai also got delayed for 6-7 hours. So at the airport, I met Atul Bhosekar, who was also a speaker at the Kerala Literature Festival. And at that time, I was also traveling with my equipment, and we thought, why not record a podcast at the airport waiting room, and rather than getting frustrated with this delay, do something productive with our time. So this is how this episode, which is based on the philosophy of Buddhism, was recorded. And Atul is a perfect person to talk about Buddhist philosophy. Atul Bhosekar is a speaker and Buddhist cave researcher. He has been conducting workshops on Buddhist caves for last 25 years. As a director of Tribals, which is TRIBILS, a research institute, he has received the Limca Book of World Records for teaching Dhammalipi to 2,500 school students. Atul has written various articles in newspaper and research journals. He travels widely within and outside the country for talks on Buddhist culture. Before I start the podcast, request you to please support this small, ad-free, independent podcast. You, the listeners, are the only funders of this podcast. The podcast is totally free to consume. Not many people listen to it, but very few contribute to keep it going. So I request you to become a patron of this podcast to keep it going. There are other ways through which you can support, but the Patreon remains the most preferred medium as it keeps the podcast going on the monthly basis. So please check out all the links in the description box and help me to sustain this podcast and keep these conversations going. And now let's start the episode number 88 of Anurag Mahesh Verma podcast. So currently we are stuck at this airport, and because of the IndiGo flight that we have booked, and this gives us a very good opportunity to record the podcast. And this is a very unusual location to record the podcast, since we are currently recording at the airport waiting room. So let's fill this airport waiting rooms with some intellectual and insightful discussion. I'm so glad that you are here, and I learned so much from you, from the little conversations that we had since last day. And I remember you telling me a very interesting detail about caves, like how you got interested in caves. And in Nasik, you were visiting one cave for, let's say, I think 17, 18 years. And it was the same cave where earlier it was totally abandoned, and no authorities took care of it, and mostly people who used to do these activities of, you know, smoking up or drinking, and these kind of people used to come there to these caves. But you took interest in it and try to get the attention of the authority to preserve, because since these are the not even the national but the world heritage. So what was that whole process of preserving these caves? And and also it would be good if you can also explain what exactly are these Buddhist caves which are present in so many locations in India.
First of all, it is a great pleasure to meet you. I have heard about you earlier, but then meeting you in person and discussing so many things, interesting facts about your podcast and your creativity, I've been really fascinated by it. And of course, thanks to Calicut Airport that we have so much of time. Coming to these caves, the first cave which was excavated in India was by Emperor Ashoka in 3rd century BCE. Now, in those days, basically, the reason why he excavated, and it's a very interesting one, the Buddhist monks during monsoon retreat, what we call, or in Pali as it is called as Vasa Vasa, that is Varshavas. So during the monsoon season, when they could not travel to various villages, the Buddha had asked them to stay at one place and carry out all the discussions. So even the lay people used to come and meet the Buddhist monks during this particular period, and they used to discuss a lot about Dhamma activities and so many things. So when these monks used to stay at a single place in the Buddha's period and even later on, they used to either take shelter at some abandoned home or maybe in a jungle or maybe in some mountain, some cave, some cavern, they used to take shelter in. Ashoka was the first person who understood the need for the Buddhist monks during this monsoon period to give them some shelter. And to have a permanent shelter, he introduced a different media to the Indian workmanship, and that was excavating the cave in a mountain. So the first cave which was excavated by Ashoka was in the present Bihar state, in Jahanabad district, and the Barabar and Nagarjuni caves. It is really surprising to know that these caves were excavated just by using a chisel and hammer. And if you visit Barabar caves, you'll see the entire cave is mirror polished, wherein you can see your reflection in the walls. And it is not understood by even the latest historians or the architects how this polish has come. And as they have named it as a Mauryan polish. You can understand history because of the inscriptions which has been written in these caves.
But what exactly was inscribed on these caves? Because most of the people haven't really, I think, been to the caves and have very little idea about what exactly is written on these walls. Because we normally these days have Facebook walls, which are also like modern caves. But what exactly were these people writing on these caves, or let's say painting on this cave? Because cave painting in itself is a genre. So what were they expressing? Were they expressing their daily lives? Were they expressing their hunting activities or something about the religion or some ritualistic thing? What exactly is written on that? It would be very interesting to know, because then only we can understand that what was the life back then, or let's say what was the economic or the social conditions back then through these inscription and also through these paintings.
One very important thing which has been seen, see, the artist, they wanted to convey a lot of message. When we visit the Buddhist caves, like you said, most of the people, they come for just doing some video photography and just uploading in some of their various social media accounts. But the real fact is, if you really look at the caves on a little bit more serious note, we will understand the craftsmanship of this artist and the message what they wanted to convey. See, in those days, like today, when we are talking about male-female equality in so many sectors, even in those days, during the Satavana periods, there were female officers only to look after the female population. A very interesting fact which was started by Ashoka. Ashoka had women officers to look after women problems, whatever the problems women were facing in those days. And this has been mentioned in the inscription.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is not an imaginary thing. So Satavanas, who were sort of prime ministers for the Mauryan earlier, when the Mauryan kingdom, it was sort of declined during that period. The Satavanas took over the area and declared themselves as king. But being the followers of Mauryan dynasty and their concepts, they too followed the same things. So the Satavanas had women officers in their kingdom. And this can be depicted, this has been very well depicted by the artist in the caves. So how is the officer depicted? A person who rides an ox, that is a buffalo or a cow, basically, he is a lay person. Okay? A person who rides an elephant is an officer. A person who rides a lion is a royal person. It's either a king, the queen, or probably the prince, princess. So the artist has depicted on the caves ki how many people have visited the caves, which the societal level people have entered. So if a lay person is shown paying homage to the caves, he is shown he is riding the ox. officer, a royal officer at the king's place, he's shown riding an elephant. And the king is shown by riding the lion. So these are the things we can see. Here in these caves, we can see women officers riding the elephant. So it clearly depicts that there were women officers during the Satavahana period. That is what the artist wanted us to, he wanted to convey that particular message, which cannot be written, but he has shown in terms of his artistic skill in sculpture. So this is purely not just simply an art, something we can come to know. It is the artist who wanted to convey that there were women officers during this Satavahana period.
That's a very interesting point, that women officers were present at that time, and even in our current era in India, we are fighting for the more participation of the women in the workforce. And I'm also curious to understand that, have you ever studied, or let's say figure it out during your research, about when was this whole culture of women participating in the workforces ended, at which particular time it ended?
Well, as far as the dating goes, these caves have been dated between 2nd century BCE to 2nd century current era. So in these 400 years, we can understand that women officers have really, the women folks were empowered very well during this particular period. Probably later on, and according to my study, after the 11th, 12th century, the status of women started degrading, throughout our country. And this could be probably because of the conservativeness which was developed in the people, and the Buddhist culture, which has instilled equality and a lot of human ideas, they started to decline after the 11th century. And this point is very clearly proven, because after the 11th century, Buddhism itself started decline in India. And then we had this other conservative religions, conservative sects, which became very much prominent. And they started instilling their ideas about inequality among the population in general, and inequality among men and women. And that is where the status of women started degrading. And then we continuously see that by 15th, 16th century, the status of women were so much degraded that they had hardly any role to play in the society.
When I travel to these places, these Buddhist places like Vietnam and Thailand and other places, I have seen women work spaces so much more than, let's say, India. And in fact, you will see women controlling and dominating most of the professions there. When I visited as a tourist, I was also very curious to understand that, is there any link of this whole thing with the Buddhism as a religion, or maybe this is one factor and there are many other factors as well?
All these countries, basically, they benefited from India a lot, because Ashoka, that is in 3rd century BCE, started sending a lot of missionaries to various countries for the spread of the Buddha's word. Now, this has been continued when we see history. In the 5th and 6th century, most of these nearby countries, they converted themselves to the Buddhist ideas, and they started declaring themselves as a Buddhist country. Like, for example, you take in Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, or even in the nearby Sri Lanka. All these countries, they were so much, in awe, or rather they were inspired by the Ashokan theory, the Ashokan idea about administration. They started literally copying Ashoka in their entire administration. In fact, the Sri Lankan king started calling himself as Devanam Priyan Ashoka. That is how we come to know about from the inscription and the various things. Even the Thailand king started spending a lot of time with the Buddhist monks and understanding the Buddhist concept. Getting inspiration from the Buddhist ideas, they themselves converted and made their entire nation as a Buddhist nation. Buddha talks about equality among everyone. So naturally, male and female, that is the men and women population, also were considered equal. And same thing, these kingdoms, or rather these countries, they started adopting these Buddhist practices. And so we see, even the ratio, I mean, the birth ratio among men and women is quite comparable in these Buddhist countries, especially Thailand. The women are more empowered, in fact, in Thailand compared to the men. You can see women working everywhere across compared to the men. So it is, I believe, that it is the Buddhist ideas which spread in this country in the 6th century, that is the current era, and they have been practicing so far, right? So this naturally have given women more empowerment, women more weightage, and women, in fact, have been the decision makers in most of the part of Thailand where I have seen in most of the households.
Yes, I mean, it's very interesting that when I was planning to visit Thailand, then I thought it might be like some kind of a third world country, or some country like us, let's say. But when I visited, then it almost felt like a first world to me. The kind of the cleanliness, the hygiene, even the basic discipline in the people. Even when you order Uber there, the Fortuner will come. You know, these big car will come. Uber, or let's say Grab, that they have there. So it was very different in that sense. And also the whole experience of the travel, it was so smooth, scam-free mostly. So I really wondered if that advancement of theirs has to do with the religion, let's say, the religious teaching, because there is no idea of hierarchy as such as we have in our country. So there is no like the assigned jobs to people and looking down upon certain kind of job and things like that. So it felt as if, because of lack of that hierarchy and because of lack of any caste system, also helps nations to develop further. And I think many researchers and many economists have also worked on this aspect, written many books. I think recently a book also came out, Why India Lagged Behind Its Neighbor, and it explained how the countries around us also developed much more, and one of the reason for it is because there is no caste system. So this whole idea of the caste system is not only dangerous to the humanity, or let's say dangerous to the society as a whole, but also for the economic progression. Because if there is a very certain kind of a hierarchical system that exists in a country, then it is not possible for it to develop in the economic sense as well.
Absolutely. See, caste divides, decasting unites. It's a beautiful thing. Now I'll give you another example. Since you are in Thailand, let's take Bhutan for example. Bhutan adopted Buddhism around 5th to 6th century, right? From that period till date, Bhutan has been following all Buddhist practices. You take in Bhutan is presently, though it is the poorest nation so far, yet on the happiness index, it is the highest. It has the highest happiness index, where people are so much satisfied even with the lesser means. This is the Buddha's principle across. First, not damaging the environment where you are living in. Because you and every component of this environment, whether it is the trees, whether it is the animals, whether it is the human beings, you are in a synergistic process. You have to live in synergy. This is the Buddha's word. Bhutan has been practicing it in total. Second thing, you have to use the natural resources to the minimum level. Bhutan has been using the same things across. So what happens is, once your need becomes a greed, then you start exploiting everything around you because it's your greed. In Bhutan, the greed factor is not there. People live as per their needs. And because if your needs are minimal, what is required for a living, automatically you become, you consider anything, your resources around you, interdependency is there, and you consider that I am taking the help, or I need these trees. So I should cultivate more trees because I need trees. So this particular thing, which we normally call as a synergistic relationship, is very well maintained in Bhutan. And that is why it is one of the most happiest country.
In fact, in India, there is also this whole psychological thing that there is somebody beneath me to take care of me. So this is, I think, one of the reasons that people just kachra kahin fek dete hain, they throw litter anywhere because they know that there is somebody below them to take care of it. So in that sense, the individual is also not independent of that whole structure. They in their mind are always aware of, I don't have any special responsibilities as an individual because somebody will take care of it.
See, in India, we have work-related issues, that is the status related to work, and second is we have the caste-related issues. Every upper caste thinks about there has to be someone below me whom I can control. And that is how the caste system has become more and more prominent, and it has become a more tightly packed compartment. Okay, and everyone likes to rule on someone. That is point number one. So it is the societal hierarchy, that is one. Second is the work hierarchy. Like if you take the European standards, there even the company's boss and the company's worker, they are at par because they are working at their respective levels, but that doesn't make the boss a great guy. Even the worker over there who's doing a work, he has an equal right, in fact, to even the question the boss. And even the worker is respected because he is doing a particular job. Okay, in our country, a sweeper is always considered to be the lowermost category, and he is looked down upon. Right. So we have this caste system so much ingrained in ourselves that we always look upon the other person who is either of a lower caste or who is doing a lower category of work. Okay, just in the Indian context, he's been always looked down upon, and he is either, he could be abused, he could be controlled, he could be subjected to so many injustices, and we consider that as a priority, that I have been given a right, that privilege right is there.
And the whole fact that they are suffering because they must have done something bad in the past.
Bad in the past, that is their karma. We have that karma issue.
And this whole karma theory, I see, even so many liberal commentators using this word very lightly, like when something bad happens to the opposite political camp, they say it's karma, it's because of the karma, karma will haunt you. They even don't know that the origin of this whole thing is casteist in nature. So how can you use the word so lightly?
Absolutely, absolutely. This, what you say is absolutely right. The karma thing has been so much ingrained. If the karma didn't exist, then the entire theory about lower and upper caste, or maybe the lower work and upper work itself, would have been destroyed so far.
Since we are discussing Buddhism, it is also very important to understand the idea of meditation. The whole idea of meditation, I think, in the recent year have... especially due to social media and especially due to the awareness, many people are opting for the meditation, and it has become one of the lifestyle thing in itself, which is good in a way, but there is also some kind of misconception about meditation as if meditation is something where there are only good vibes and like we should avoid bad vibes, or it is meditation or meditational thing or spiritual thing is also being disconnected with the world, especially with the politics of the world, which might be triggering, which might be, you know, difficult, and not consuming anything which can trigger you and things like that. So in a way, meditation and spirituality has also become some kind of a delusional thing as well, if I can use that word. Although the real idea of meditation, or how I see it, is not something which is done in the isolation or something which is taking yourself away from the real world and, you know, hiding somewhere. I think meditation is more about understanding or having the awareness of the self, so that you can deal the world and deal your own problems in a more rational, intelligent, and somewhat empathetic way. So it's more of a technique to deal with the world rather than to run away from the world. So which has become kind of a Sadly, the opposite has become kind of the buzzword, these good vibes, and you know that. So what do you think personally about meditation and how it can be helpful for the current generation?
Very interesting question. Very interesting. In fact, the Buddhist concepts talk about being in the world, always been present in the present moment. That is what the Buddhist concept talk about. The Buddha has been talking this in so many suttas we can understand from the Pali Tripitaka. Meditation is one part of the Buddhist concept. The reason why Buddha introduced this meditation, which he said is the human nature basically to practice meditation. Men are born with that particular attitude. Unfortunately, we have forgotten it because we have not been taught it right from our birth. Meditation per se is a technique where you become more close to yourself, more close to your environment near you. In fact, it makes you realize what is your really worth, what you are. I mean, the question what has been pestering so many intellectuals and so many scholars of spirituality right from the earlier days is, who am I? Buddhism gives an answer to this through way of meditation. Meditation, according to me, is basically to empower yourself with an attitude to understand nature and understand yourself. It is one of the easiest way to remain in nature. Now, there are of course people who have come out with various techniques of meditation. Buddha has talked about nearly 70 types of meditation practices. Now, the question now arises, why so many types of practices when you can have only one and we can prefer? Buddha has very clearly said human beings have got different attitudes. Every person has got a different attitude. Every person has got a different mental makeup. And every person responds to a particular situation in a different way. Right? So he says that suppose one is at ease practicing a certain type of meditation, the same technique would probably not be good enough for another person. And that is why he has given different types of practices where you can practice either one or you can practice all of them and come to a closest thing where you can understand yourself. Meditation is nothing except how you can understand yourself much better and be alert, be sakshi to all the nearby environment, right? So that means you are one with nature. Now people have taken a clue out of this and started their own practices by either renaming meditation techniques, mindfulness and so many things, or by giving a technique, this particular technique, a twist. So then we have those involving your chakras, involving your so many things.
Which chakras has become very popular, especially in Goa, like open your chakras and
open your chakras. We have this one person talking about Sudarshan Chakra. Okay, revitalizing your Sudarshan Chakra, Sudarshan Kriya.
Open your third eye. I was in Goa and somebody randomly asked me, hey, do you want to open your third eye?
Open your third eye. I mean, the question is, if you keep your two eyes intact and understand it better, you don't require a third eye. It is so easy. But then people like something complex. See, human nature is something that if you give an easy thing, people don't feel challenging. People want something which is very complex in nature.
वो ऐसे ही कि इसमें क्या देखूँ सांस आ रहा है जा रहा है
जाते हैं क्या देखना
है अपने आप ही जा रहा है इसमें मैं
क्या वो तो naturally है उसको तो हमको कुछ control नहीं करना but the moment you say control your breathing do breathing only with one nostril and leave it with another
हाँ मतलब एक टांग पे खड़े हो जाओ और अपने हाथ को पीछे से लेके खुजली करो पैर पे या फिर खड़े खड़े अपने मुंह से पैर की पप्पी ले लो समथिंग लाइक दैट
तो लोगों को लगता है यार ये इतना कॉम्प्लेक्स है सो पीपल आर मोर हैप्पी इन डूइंग समथिंग कॉम्प्लेक्स एंड बुद्धा टॉक्स एग्जैक्टली द ऑपोजिट बुद्धा सेज बी योरसेल्फ बी नेचुरल अभी नेचुरल क्या है, जो सांस हम लोग लेते जाते बचपन से लेके, द डे यू आर बॉर्न यू स्टार्ट ब्रीदिंग एंड द डे यू डाई द ब्रीदिंग स्टॉप्स. नाउ दिस इज अ वेरी नेचुरल प्रोसेस. व्हाट द बुद्धा सेज इज जस्ट ऑब्जर्व दैट ब्रीदिंग, डोंट डू एनीथिंग. बट देन पीपल डोंट लाइक टू डू सच अ सिंपल थिंग, जस्ट ऑब्जर्विंग इट, बिकॉज ऑब्जर्विंग बिकम्स अ वेरी क्रिटिकल थिंग फॉर अ मैन. Because man is born with, I mean, in his mind, there is continuously ideas which are coming and going. 1 second you have a particular idea, the second second you are into your imaginary world. The third session, I mean, third moment, you something happens and suddenly you sidetrack and go to another field. And Buddha is of that opinion that to control your mind, you need to first of all control or understand what breathing is. The moment you start observing your breathing, and it's a very beautiful technique, automatically your entire imaginary world collapses and you become at the present level. You start observing things, what is happening near you, without getting even in an entanglement. No attachment at all. Because see, a beautiful nature is that man always likes all good things to happen to him. He doesn't like anything which is crosses his mind, which opposes his mindset. Man is always uncomfortable with it. He always wants all satisfactory good things at his level. बाकी का जो भी दूसरों को होना है, मुझे सिर्फ आनंद मिलना चाहिए. And in that effort of getting more satisfaction, more happiness, he forgets the present situation and he enters into an imaginary world where he starts thinking about all goody-goody things. Buddha says that unless and until you accept the reality that as a human being in this environment, good things and bad things are going to happen to you. It is only your perspective how you look at this particular things. For I'll give you a very simple example. Suppose I'm sitting over here and if I say that we are at an airport and our flight has been delayed by 5 hours. A person who is restless, who doesn't want to accept these delays, he will become very restless and he will start insisting.
Just I showed you the video like a guy that beat up the pilot in Delhi. Delay.
Yeah, the passenger going and bashing up this some airline employee. Now, once you understand why this delay is there, and when the airline has told you that the delay is because of the fog in Delhi airport, and that's why the flights are delayed, because the flights cannot fly because of this fog level. If you understand the cause behind the delay at a very rational level, a logical level, you accept the delay. The Buddha says very clearly that you accept what is the cause behind it. Once you understand the cause and once you are satisfied with it, then there is no need of restlessness. There is no need of simply abusing or insulting someone. You accept the delay. You can't do any damn thing about it. You cannot just go and start walking to a destination, because by the time you start walking, the flight is already taken off. So the best thing is you accept there is a delay, okay? Now the next question comes, what about my next work? Suppose I was supposed to reach Nasik or Bombay Bay by 2 o'clock and then I have to schedule my so many other things. So once it is delayed, all you have to do is either delay those, postpone those particular programs or rearrange things to suit the present environment, right? As it has been known, it is because of our expectations and non-fulfillment of those expectations, people get hurt, people get abused, people get unhappy. So once you do not have expectations, automatically all things fall into normal. Now, not expecting a lot of things, okay, that is a clear way that you are one with nature. And to come to that stage, you require to have meditation. And to have this meditation, you need to observe your breathing so that your entire mind is concentrated at a particular level, at a particular point, wherein rather the mind starting controlling you, you start controlling the mind. And the beauty of this meditation technique is that it gives you a total control over what thoughts you should accept, I mean, should arise in your mind, and what thoughts which come across, you just let it pass. That is, unfavorable thoughts, you let it pass. You just observe it and don't react to it. The moment we react to it, see, any thought which passes, which crosses our mind, if we catch hold of that particular thought, we are in problem. Whether it is a good thought or whether it is a bad, that attachment itself is a problem. Right? Like the Buddha says, attachment brings suffering. And anything which is undesirable, unthoughtful of, that gives you, again, dukkha, that is, unhappiness. Like any dearer thing to you, if it is taken away from you, that will give you unhappiness. And any unhappy thing which is brought, which is forced upon you, that will also give you unhappiness. That's a very beautiful pad, or we could say the Dhammapada Gatha in his head. Well, the Buddha says, apiya sangahi dukkho, piya jayati dukkha, and apiya sangahi dukkha. That means anything which is dearer to you, when it is snatched away from you, you feel dukkha, you feel sorrow. And anything apriya, that means which you don't like, and if it has been forced upon you, that will also bring you dukkha.
इसे तो मुझे गाना याद आ गया, जगने छीना मुझको
मुझको मुझको भी लगा प्यारा. नहीं नहीं, इस बात का देखो, अगर आप गौर से देखोगे, sometimes I feel Buddha has talked about everything about psychology, human psychology. He is not talking anything outside human psychology. See, for example, like a small child, he loves a toy, and if you snatch a toy from him, I mean, he feels so much sad, so much unhappy. He will create a fuss over that entire thing. I mean, he is unhappy because that his favorite toy has been snatched away from him. Like, we suppose we are sitting in a plane. Okay, we are sitting. Now, unfortunately, the person whom you dislike sits next to you in the aeroplane. And the journey is 5 hours. What will happen to you? I mean, you will be so much restless because this guy whom, as probably you don't even like to see his face, he has come and sat next to you. What will happen to your mental status? For the entire 5 hours, you are not going to enjoy the flight. You are not going to enjoy the meals which has been served by the flight, however delicious it is. You are not going to enjoy any damn thing in the flight because this guy whom you dislike so much has sat next to you. So this liking and disliking, Buddha says, if the liking and disliking is in the human being, then suppose the human being is not there, then automatically the liking and disliking has to go. So the liking and disliking is not for the other person. It is your own mind where the liking and disliking arises.
So sir, normally people tell me that they listen to my podcast when they have to deal with the boredom of the long flights. But today we have recorded a podcast because of the boredom of a delayed flight. So we have converted our frustration in a very calm and composed intellectual discussion about the Buddhism. And it was such a lovely experience. I learned so much from you by just sitting and talking at this airport waiting room. And I really hope that in future also, because of a delayed flight, we meet. So thank you so much, sir, for sharing such valuable insight to me and my listener. Thank you sir.
Thank you so much, and it's been a pleasure to talk with you. After listening to all your stories about podcast and the way you have handled various situations, whether it is a sarcastic things and bringing smiles to the people's life who are already been stressed out, I mean, the real credit goes to you. and a lot of good efforts you have been doing, and I really look forward that you keep on bringing smiles to people's faces which have been stressed out in the present situation. And of course, I should be thankful to Calicut Airport and the airlines, Indigo Airlines, for giving us such a beautiful time, I mean, to spend out with a person who is so creative. So thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, sir. So this was today's episode. Please check out the description box and support my work. You can support me by becoming a patron on Patreon or by making donation through easy to use platforms like PayPal, Buy Me a Coffee or InstaMojo. I also have a live wish list which is going on Buy Me a Coffee, where you can make upfront donation. So please take a look and consider helping me to complete the wish list. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Thank you.